For January 19th, 2017, it's the Lullabot Podcast. It's the Lullabot Podcast, episode 204. I'm Matt Cleave, a senior developer at Lullabot. With me, as always, co-host of the show, front-end developer Mike Herschel. Hey, Mike.
Hey, how are you doing?
Really good. How are you?
I was going to say it's a beautiful day down here in warm, sunny Florida.
It's cold in Colorado. I think the snow was flying a little bit earlier. But we are talking about a topic today that should warm your heart, Mike.
Yes.
I know that before you were a front-end developer at Lullabot, you actually ran your own development company, right?
I did. I did for a long time in the mid-2000s. And so we were – a lot of what we tried to do was get traffic to our customers' websites, of course.
So getting traffic to the fancy Drupal website you built, there's a process for that, right? How does that work?
Yeah, that's a good question, and it's very complicated.
So today we're talking about SEO, or search engine optimization. So making your website in a way that your prospective clients can find you, right? I guess that's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
And with us, sounds we have somebody who knows a whole lot more about it on the topic than I do.
He wrote the book on it.
He wrote the book on it. He also made the DVD on it. Did you know that?
No.
Yes. So our guest today was on the Drupal SEO series, which was originally a Lullabot DVD, but can still be seen on Drupalize Me.
So we have Mr. Ben Finkley here, who has been working on the internet since 1995. He has been on Drupal.org for 11 years. Started four companies. Currently the CEO of Valachi, the Drupal SEO agency, and author of a new book, Drupal 8 SEO, that you can now get on Amazon or Drupal8SEO.com. Welcome, Ben.
Thanks, guys. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me on.
So as Valachi goes, I guess you're a marketing and search engine optimization company?
Right. That's exactly right. We help our clients get more leads and revenue from their Drupal site. And we are very much focused on the Drupal ecosystem.
So this is something that you guys have been, Valachi's been around for several years now, right? How long?
What year is this? I guess it's been about eight or nine years now as Valachi. And then we were around for a couple of years before that under a different brand. But we've been in the Drupal community for, 11 years now, and been very involved in the SEO side of things for most of that. So, yeah.
So I guess to kick it off from the 10,000 foot level there. So what is SEO, and how does it work?
Sure. So SEO, of course, is search engine optimization, but it's bigger than just making your site work for Google. So it's really more about how to make your site work for visitors, helping you get the word out about your company, about your product. And then once you get that traffic to your site, it's about conversion. So turning those visitors into leads or into purchasers of your product. Search engine optimization, it's helping your customers understand whether your product is good for them or not. And but it's very much also about getting the search engines to appreciate how important you are as well.
Yeah. So how do search engines rank content? Like what's the quick and dirty way that they actually look at your website and decide that you should be ranked number one for Drupal 8 SEO, or that you should be ranked number, 10 for Drupal 8 SEO?
Sure. Well, it starts with the query. And I guess in this case, we're going to use Drupal 8 SEO as our query. And so somebody's sitting down to Google and they're typing it into the Google search. These days, somebody doing a voice search on their mobile phone, or even asking Google for directions, that's going to be considered a search query. So Google starts with the query, but let me step away from the query for a minute and talk about the fact that they go through and they crawl the entire web and then evaluate all the pages that they find. And this is, of course, an ongoing process, and they've been doing this for decades now. But what they do is they go to your site and they take a look at the characteristics that make it a good site. So they're looking for things like, is it accessible to screen readers? Do they label their content pretty well? Like, you know, if you have an image, do you put like an alt tag on that image, things like that? Do they have good content? Do they have good long form explanatory content that, you know, really is engaging to a potential site visitor? Then they look in and see how credible the site is. So is it, you know, being shared on social media? Do people link to it? Has the site been around for a while, or is it something that just somebody threw up one day? And then finally, and this is at, of course, at a very high level, they look at how many people are linking to that site. And they look at how important the sites that are linking to you. So again, at a very high level, they're kind of looking at a whole host of criteria to determine how important and how relevant your page is to that particular query. So they got to make some assumptions about that query, right? So, I mean, if you type a search in for Drupal 8 SEO, you might be looking for my book. You might be looking for help doing Drupal 8 SEO. You might be looking for a how-to guide. You might be looking for a new restaurant called Drupal 8 SEO. I don't know. But you might be looking at a number of different things, and that could really sway which search results that Google's going to show you.
Now, you keep saying Google. You've said it a few times. Obviously, it's the search engine that a lot of people use, but there are other options out there, right? Do people actually use them?
So, you know, the short answer is yes. The short answer is yes. There are many other search engines out there that people use. The long answer is no. Seriously, though, it really depends on what country you're looking at. If you're on mobile or you're on desktop, things like that. I think the last I looked, Bing is something like 8%, 8 to 10% of desktop searches, and Google is something like 85%. But if you switch over to mobile, suddenly Google has like 92% of the search market, which, you know. And so when you kind of look at, well, am I optimizing for all the search engines? Well, I mean, optimize for Google first, obviously.
Sure.
No
client has ever come to you saying they wanted to be number one on Yahoo.
I mean, I would say they don't come to me saying that. They say that after they're already number one on Google, and then they go, well, what about these other ones?
Okay. Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, but at the same time, you know, you just don't want to ignore 8% of your potential customers either, right?
Yeah, absolutely right. So, and what's good news, though, is that the way that Google looks at the importance of the site, I mean, there's a lot of overlap with how Bing looks at it, and even Yahoo. I mean, Yahoo's not a slouch. I mean, certainly they have less than 5% of market share, but if you're going to look at Bing, you've got to also look at Yahoo.
Does Yahoo use Bing? I remember reading that somewhere.
Yeah. So Microsoft actually paid Yahoo billions of dollars over the last several years to basically all of the paid search, all of Microsoft's paid ads are now what show up on Yahoo.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
And when you look at mobile market share, the thing to think about here, and something that we tend to forget, is that this whole Android operating system that Google came out with, about 9 or 10 years ago, the whole point was so that they could own the market share for mobile search.
Sure, and Android is huge, especially when you look globally, right? You get outside of the United States, Android dwarfs.
Yeah.
Well, I think even in the U.S., it's the dominant market share.
And then Microsoft, how well have they done with their mobile phones?
Yeah, not too well, huh?
Not too good. And where did that search market share go? It went back over to Google. Yeah.
Interesting. So let's talk about some SEO factors, right? So you talked a little bit about inbound links and how people link to you and the quality of the websites that link to you. But what can you do on your actual website to kind of optimize your website to make people be able to find you, to make you number one when you're selling, you know, I like my Connect Four game here, if I'm selling Connect Four games or something.
You're selling Connect Four games? Is this a real thing?
No, but I'm a Connect Four enthusiast.
Okay, all right, you're a Connect Four enthusiast, mm-hmm. And you need to optimize your site so that you can. Okay, got it. Well, I mean, there's a number of things. Obviously, the on-page elements are critical to the success of a search campaign, and you know, when you're looking at what specifically
referring to stuff that gets returned with HTML, the on-page elements.
Right. So yeah, from a browser perspective, it's the stuff when I say, hey, send me this, I click on a link and it goes to a page, what comes back? You know, it comes back a bunch of HTML. There might be all kinds of stuff going on behind the scenes, but basically what comes back is HTML and some JavaScript and some CSS and some things that kind of render, make that page render and look the way that that it should. So, in fact, I wrote a whole book on how to optimize your Drupal site. But some of those things to look at, let me just glance at my notes here. So like meta tags, I guess, is one of the things that is often discussed. Meta tags are these pieces of data about your site that are often in the header of the site. And certainly if you lump together the title tag with meta tags, then they are just super critical to the success of optimizing your page, making sure that you're describing the content that's on the page really well. And we do that with the meta tags module in Drupal, of course. But the title and the description from your meta tags is what Google uses to actually create your search listing. So if you go look at any search in Google, you read what that listing is, that came from the title tag of that page. So it's really critical for click-through rate and also for Google to help Google understand the relevance of that page. But also, go ahead.
I said that makes a lot of sense. I remember like the meta keywords tag and back in the day, websites used to just kind of stuff that with whatever keywords that were relevant to their website or not.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. I had a friend who I think was working on his web development company website, and I was looking at it over his shoulder, and he had stuffed, you know, in his meta tags, it was, you know, free porn and beer and I guess things that people were looking for. I'm like, dude, this is your company's site. What are you doing? Yeah. It's like, well, no, it's so Google picks it up. Oh, really?
Yeah, that can't be a thing now, right?
No. Hopefully this was a long time ago.
It's been 10 years or so, yeah.
Yeah, keywords have been ignored by Google, certainly, and by Bing for a very long time. I will sometimes put a keyword in when I'm working on a client site, but honestly, it's only because my clients will get phone calls from competitive agencies and they'll say, oh, your SEO guy's not doing his job. He hasn't even done anything with keywords. You know, it's like, oh, come on. That's nothing. That's all right. So I'll put a keyword in there for him.
Those are the same people that promised to get you ranked number one on Google, I'm assuming.
exact same guys. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Ignore the keywords meta tag. Pay more attention to things like Open Graph. So Open Graph is Facebook's standard for meta tags. And they actually have published this and made it open source so anybody can use it. But they'll use it for things like determining what image should show up on your page when somebody shares your site or your page on Facebook. And you can actually, you know, if you have your logo and you have an image, like a header image, and then you have the image for that content, sometimes it's hard for them to determine what's the right image for that piece of content. Well, you can actually specify that in the Open Graph metadata. So make sure you have that set properly. And of course, in Drupal, you're going to use a token to drop in the image field instead of, say, the logo field or something, some other piece of content that they might just scrape and decide that that's the right one. They'll look at the Open Graph instead and put the right piece of content there.
Which is interesting because like something like sharing your link on Facebook isn't really search engine optimization. It's definitely content optimization because that could be somebody's first experience with you. Is you know they had a friend share a link and you click on it and yeah. All of a sudden you have a new client.
One of the things that we talk about sometimes in the SEO world is that the definition of SEO is just constantly expanding. It used to just be about, can I get you ranked in Google? You know, can I get you number one in Google? And it's really become more about traffic generation from all sources. You know, sharing on social media is a very important part of getting links. It's an important part of your reputation. And, you know, even things as mundane as a press release now, they go through a search engine optimization process to make sure that they show up when somebody searches those databases for news content. So it continually expands. Conversions. I mean, 10 years ago, I didn't talk about conversions that much. It just wasn't part of the SEO story. That was more of a design thing. Now it's, I don't know, I spent half my time working on conversions work. So yeah, it's an expanding definition for sure.
So that's kind of interesting. How important is semantic markup to the search results or to your search engine, you know, your placement? And the reason I'm asking is because obviously like Drupal 7 has this reputation of having like 27, you know, div wrappers around every single field. Does that matter as far as your ranking? I mean, obviously it's bad for a lot of other reasons, but do they take that into account?
So semantic markup is very important. I don't know about the div, the 27 div tag. I just don't know, I guess, enough to answer that part of the question.
Yeah, yeah, that's fine. That's fine.
You know, semantic markup, like you're talking about like schema.org type things?
Well, no, I that's another question. I'm talking about, say, like using like a header tag for the header, using, you know, footer tag for the footer, using maybe... proper ARIA
using
attributes
HTML
and stuff
elements
like that.
To be actually what they're intended to be, not just style.
Yeah, there's an address element now that initially wasn't even intended to use for addresses, but now it can be used. And, you know, just things like that. I have no clue if that's important.
It is. So I guess the structure of the page is maybe a way of talking about that. So how a page is structured is really critical. I mean, you've got things like you mentioned the heading tags. Sometimes things that are ignored are, I mentioned this earlier, but like alt tags for images, even title tags for images. You look at, you know, when you have a form, there's like the title of the form. When you've got a chart on the page or a table on the page, you know, there's labels and stuff for that. Those are all considered kind of part of that semantic markup, I guess, is in this context. And so making sure that those things are, you know, are written well, that they contain good descriptors of the content, that the content is relevant. I mean, yeah, I think all those things are super important.
Yeah, and that's also, you know, a lot of the same stuff that is important for accessibility, you know, so it's good that that they take that into account, you know, because screen readers, you know, will go over that information also.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So we call that the outline, you know, kind of the document outline. The way that we think about it is if you just kind of pulled all that stuff out of the page, you would have a pretty good table of contents for that page. So then that's, you know, that's one way to think about doing search engine optimization is just structuring the page well. And that can go a long way.
Okay. What about sitemaps? You know, I've had sitemaps explained to me. It just helps Google find your documents if your site structure is not quite easy enough for it to navigate, or does it actually increase rankings?
So you know, SEO is or can be a lot more than just rankings. It's making sure that your content is actually in the search index is a big part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what an XML sitemap is going to do. So it actually goes through it, and I'm talking about the XML sitemap module for Drupal. It pulls all of your nodes and pulls them all into a single XML document that that you can then go and submit to the search engines. Something to remember, I'm not going to describe how to do it, but make sure that you put that also in your robots.txt file because some search engines will look for it there as well. But we had a couple of years ago, we had a Scientific Supply client that they had a big online store with a bunch of like scientific that you could order tools and reagents and all kinds of stuff from this place. And they had thousands, just tens of thousands of line items all on their website, but they weren't showing up in the search engines. They weren't showing up, in this case, in Google. So we ended up actually having to use a third-party tool to create the XML sitemap because it was too big and PHP kept timing out. So we created this massive sitemap, submitted it, and their search traffic skyrocketed. I mean,
wow.
It went to like double or triple their traffic. I don't remember offhand how much, but it was just a massive increase in the amount of traffic. And it's because they, you know, and at that point, it was pretty early in the engagement that they weren't particularly well optimized. You know, the content was all there, but it wasn't like marked up very well. But the products that he was selling were so specific to what people needed that just making sure that it got into the search index got lots of eyeballs on his site. So I think it's a, I consider it critical to ranking, because you need to make sure that you're in there. Now, you know, if your site content's already in Google, putting it in your XML sitemap is not going to make it go higher. However, you know, almost every site I come across, there is at least part of the content that's, for whatever reason, just not making it into Google.
Yeah, as I understand it, Google spiders your website. So if you can't click to get there, Google might not be able to find it.
That's right. Well, they follow links.
Okay.
I mean, that's what a spider does. I guess you just said that. But they follow links. And so if the page is linked from another site, they'll follow that link and find that content and crawl it and scrape the content and evaluate it. But it's easy for pages or even whole parts of a site to get orphaned, because as pagination, like take a blog, for example, the more blog posts you publish, older content just gets shoved deeper and deeper and deeper down in the site. And the crawler's not going to just spend all the time in the world on your site. They're going to grab the most obvious things. They may not follow all the pagination links. They may not see them as relevant. And so that old content ends up getting buried. One of the things I love about Drupal's taxonomy system is that when you tag content, it creates individual pages, and those pages tend to stay at a higher level. So a piece of content that might have gotten buried in your blog, it's now going to be at a much higher level because of the taxonomy system. I think it's a competitive advantage for Drupal. I've been saying that for years, is that our taxonomy system is just so much better than anybody else.
That's pretty interesting.
How about new things that are more technological? Analysis of site speed, or whether you're using SSL on mm-hmm. your website.
Mm-hmm. So Google's in a very enviable position in that they can influence the way that people create websites. And websites were, and a lot of them still are very slow. They take a long time to load. They're just not, I don't know if it's the server or the way the site's built, they're not cached. And so Google came out, I guess it was about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, and they said site speed is really important to us, and we're going to make that part of our search algorithm. And so suddenly you started seeing people optimizing their sites. You started seeing new tools come out for testing and load testing and balancing and things like that to make sites respond faster to a user's query. Most recently, the AMP standard, Google came out with this thing called Accelerated Mobile Pages. And it just is that it accelerates the mobile user's experience. What they're basically doing is caching a local copy to that user. So when they request the page, it just, like, you know, in a third of a second, it's on the page. In fact, I think Lullabot had something to do with, getting that, suite of modules produced.
You were lobbing me a softball. I was ready to say something. Yeah. So there were some Lullabots that had the opportunity to work, with or for Google, I guess. And, they worked on the Accelerated Mobile Pages project. If you go to drupal.org/project/AMP, mm-hmm. some of those tools and that documentation is there for Drupal 7 and Drupal 8 as far as, you know, making AMP work for your Drupal site. So
Yeah,
and we also developed a standalone PHP library that could be included by other, you know, PHP systems to translate your data, to translate your HTML to AMP formatted HTML. And the module makes use of that. But what's interesting is, like, it's on packages and stuff like that. So you can pull it into Composer, into your own libraries.
That's great.
Yeah.
So I know the AMP standard is still, you know, developing I looked at this a few days ago. I think it's been a few months since there's been a release of the AMP module that you guys put out. Are you guys still developing on that, working on that?
I don't think it's under active development. That being said, I personally worked on a project for a large publisher where we rolled out AMP formatted, you know, content to their different properties. I think there were like five or six different sites that we rolled that out to, and that went pretty well. And we were actually able to contribute back to the module and stuff like that during that project too, which was pretty cool.
Yeah, that's very cool. So I'm looking at Drupal.org right now. There's less than 1,000 sites are using the AMP suite, which is ridiculous. It really ought to be something that many, many, many more sites are using, especially any news related websites, but really any site ought to be using AMP. And the reason is Google is lifting sites that use the AMP standard in the search results. You'll get better search rankings if you're using AMP on your sites. In fact, I have a, I think it's a whole chapter in my new book on using AMP and step-by-step guide on installing it on Drupal 8. So I'm a big believer, and I'm very thankful that you guys came out with that.
Yeah, it was thanks, I guess.
Yeah. Sure. What was the other question? Was SSL, I think.
SSL.
Yeah, SSL, yeah. And mobile friendly. Are those taken into account?
Absolutely. So SSL, it's another good one. I mean, it's another thing. You look around, right around the time a few years ago that all that stuff came out or started to come out about the NSA, and they were basically people were getting worried that their online activity was not only being tracked, but it was like being stored away for future reference, right? So they could subpoena all this data of everybody using the web. And Google did what I think is a very smart thing, and they said they would reward website owners with higher search rankings if they would move their sites to SSL, which is more or less just installing an SSL certificate on your site, and then making a few tweaks, and suddenly your site is delivering pages over a secure connection, and it's worked too. I mean, a lot of website owners have started to make that transition, and I think it was the latest data that I could find was about a year ago that Google said about 25% of all of the search results that they deliver are to sites that are using SSL, and I'm sure it's even higher today. But yeah, SSL is, I think, a critical part of SEO.
So we talked a little bit about the meta tags and the Facebook Open Graph, but kind of along those lines, as far as markup that's a part of the browser that a person doesn't read, but robots do. How about microdata, RDFA, yeah, schema.org type stuff? How important is that kind of?
So, RDFA, and now Google is basically more or less standardized on, I think it's JSON LD, I think it's called. I may be mispronouncing that. But basically, it's a method of taking every little bit of text off of your site and then very specifically telling the search engine exactly what that piece of text is. And the example that I like to use is, if you go to Amazon and you look for a product, there'll be the retail price, there'll be the discounted amount, and then there'll be the actual final price. And when we're looking at them, Amazon does a good job of visually showing the shopper what that what the differences are between those things. But to a bot or a scraper that's crawling, it may not be as obvious. And so you want to make sure that you pull out that price and say, this price is the discount amount, and this price is the MSRP, and this price is the actual selling price for this product. And there's actually schema.org markup for those. So you go and you put those into your code. You built it into the using in Drupal, you'd use the schema.org module. And you make sure that your site is, all of the different pieces of content are marked up. You know, there's an author on that page. You know, let's mark that as a person. There's a title of a book. Let's mark that as a publication or a book. There's all kinds of different data on a page, especially in e-commerce. There's tons of data on a page that may not be immediately obvious what it is. So schema.org in Drupal, it uses the RDFA standard, which Google still will read and respects that standard. And then I know that there's at least one project right now to deploy JSON LD. And that is... I don't think that it's been released for Drupal 8 yet. At least it wasn't when I was writing about it here a couple of months ago. So
microdata and RDFA, those are just attributes within your HTML tags, correct?
Attributes in your HTML tags, they are. You're going to add them to, if you use the schema.org, it's going to module, it's going to automatically add them.
It automatically does that, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
If it's a wrapper around your fields or adds them in the div tag. Yeah. All those div tags are good for something.
Right on. And of course, relevant content, right? I mean, you have to concentrate you know, and jockey your content to be what people are looking for as well, right? That's kind of the basic of what people think about often with SEO is, you know, relevant search key phrases or words. Yeah.
So, I mean, it starts with that, right? I mean, getting all the everything search engine optimized on a site, but that doesn't have any good content. I mean, you're not going to get any rankings at all. At least you're not going to get anything that matters because people are going to come to your site and they're going to immediately leave. Yeah. But it's one of the common SEO problems that we come across is people will they'll write content just for no reason. I mean, they don't really have a purpose in writing the content. There's no strategy behind it. So one of the things that we do is we sit down with our clients and we go, okay, who's your target audience? What's their decision-making process? And then what are the types of content that they're going to need at each stage in that process? Because everybody who comes to your site is not ready to buy. Some people are very early. Some people are ready to click and put their credit card in. But everybody comes to your site in a different frame of mind. You know, they're not sitting there with their credit card ready to punch it in right when they visit your site. So you've got to give them some content that kind of walks them down a path to conversion. And so when you know what content you have on your site and you know what your target audience needs, then that suddenly creates you can very easily see gaps. And then you sit down, you create content specifically for those gaps, and you get a much better result in your overall marketing strategy when you have great content that's going to fill those needs. Another content issue is I see is that people think of content as a blog post. And blog post is a type of content, and it's maybe the easiest one to produce because you can just sit down at your keyboard and create it, I suppose. It's easy to get into a rut of just producing blog post after blog post and not doing anything like, a podcast or a nice graphic or a survey or research or anything like that. So it's, I think, important to understand that there's lots of different types of content out there and to take advantage of those.
We're talking with Ben Finkley, the CEO of Valachi. He wrote the book on Drupal 8 SEO. We'll talk about some SEO tools and some more you can do to make your Drupal site really do well on Google coming up right after this.
Thanks for calling Lullabot. If you know your party's extension, please enter it now or press 8.
Hey, this is the listener question, Lullabot podcast line. Leave a message.
What are you doing?
Hey, I just was making sure this voicemail thing still worked.
Yeah?
Did you know that the podcast has a voicemail mailbox?
I didn't have any idea.
Yeah, if you call 877-Lullabot, extension 789, it's totally there. And I'm doing this because I think that sometimes it might get a little old listening to the same promotions from the same several sets of people, right? We hear about Tugboat, right? Lullabot software, mm-hmm. That's really cool. We hear about Drupalize Me, which is a product of Lullabot Education, our good friends over there, our sister company. Right?
We hear about Lullabot, yeah.
You hear about Lullabot itself, you know, lots of different things that are going on, the kinds of work we do, that kind of thing. What else do we do? Is that about it?
Well, we had one about Florida Drupal Camp one time.
Well, yeah, and that's exactly it. I want people to actually call the voicemail box for the podcast. It's the Lullabot phone number, 877-Lullabot, and it's extension 789. And leave a message, and we'll promote your upcoming Drupal event if you know, we get it on the podcast.
Yeah. So let's talk about Florida Drupal Camp since no one called in. And
for Florida Drupal Camp, Mike, you're an organizer of Florida Drupal Camp. What's going on there?
I am. So Florida Drupal Camp, it has traditionally been a two-day camp where we've had sessions on the first day and sprints on the second day. But this year we're making it a three-day camp. We're doing training on the first day, and we have like a whole bunch of really cool trainings, including React, Docker, beginner Drupal, Drupal front-end training, and Drupal VM training. And that's going to be pretty awesome. And then on Saturday, we're doing a full day full of sessions, and we're also going to have some lightning talks at the end. It's 5-minute talks where anybody can get up and talk. On Sunday, we're going to do more sessions, and we're also going to do a code sprint. Right now, it's looking like we're going to do an issue triage code sprint, which should be a lot of fun. We'll also have, like I said, more sessions and more fun. We're going to have an awesome after party that we do every year.
And, you know, it's Orlando in February, February 17th through 19th. You know, there's plenty of worse places in the country to be than Orlando in February.
Yeah, you know, I've been to a good number of different Drupal camps, and they all kind of have that same format with training and sprints and sessions and lots of learning going on about Drupal. But if I could pick some place to be in February, right now in Colorado, it's like 5 degrees outside. I'm going to go to Orlando in February.
Yeah, come on down.
Sounds great.
Welcome back. We're talking with Ben Finkley from Valachi, and we're talking about Drupal SEO and SEO in general. So, Ben, my first ever DrupalCon was San Francisco in 2010. And one of my favorite sessions was your session there. You did a session, I think it was on landing page optimization.
Thank you.
And I remember you would show us, you know, a landing page or like some type of page on the PowerPoint or whatever presentation software you're using, and you would show it for like 5 seconds. You say, "All right, what's that about?" And then the audience would guess, like, "I don't know what that one's about." And I thought that was a really fantastic way of kind of almost organizing your content and looking at it from like a holistic point of view. So,
So thank you for saying that. That's really kind. It's a fun little game that we do. That we sometimes still do with clients is I forget what I was. I think we call it like the 5 second rule, or the 7 second rule. I think we call it the 7 second rule. But then what you do is you kind of take it down from there. So you'd start with a screenshot of a page. And I think in that presentation, maybe we did like, I think the iPads had just come out or the iPhone maybe. And so we took a screenshot of Apple's page and we put it up on the screen and for that period of time, 7 seconds. And we said, okay. And then we asked a series of questions. And they're basic questions like, what's the product? You know, and, you know, when can you get it if you order it now? And how much does it cost? And, you know, is there, how many of them are there? And which one do you think you would buy? The idea is, that key critical information that somebody needs to make a decision has got to be front and center on your site. And it's very easy to, in your head, it's all on there, but it's not easy to find, especially when you're creating like a long form content or you have a lot to say. You know, nobody has more to say about their products than Apple, but they do it in a way that's very clean and crisp and clear. Then what we would do is we'd make adjustments to the page, and then we'd take another screenshot of it, and we take a different set of people, or even an individual, and we'd show it for 1 second less. So we go, okay, we did it for 7 seconds. Now we're gonna do it for 6 seconds. Let's see if they can answer those questions. Then we'd iterate. And so we got it down to where in 3 or 4 seconds, you can get really the most critical information off of the page. So yeah, it's part of conversion rate optimization, you know, I mean, making sure that people see what they need to see and stick around and dig to find more. I'm a reader. I don't know about you guys. I read a ton of books. My favorite one on this topic is from a guy called Steve Krug. He's got a book called Rocket Surgery Made Easy.
Is he the Don't Make Me Think guy?
Yeah, it's the yeah. Don't Make Me Think guy. And that's basically the message of Don't Make Me. So Don't Make Me Think is it's not about how many clicks you ask somebody to do. It's about how difficult each click is. So, you know, I don't care if you have to click 3 or 4 times. Is it hard to make a decision about one of those clicks? And that's usually where you'll get drop off in your conversion rate. You know, of course, if you can do it in 1 or 2 clicks, that's better. But that's not really it's the thing people focus on, but it's not really the most important thing. It's about making it easy. Yeah. Building landing pages is a lot of fun. In fact, the Drupal8SEO.com page is a landing page. You know, that's all it is. It's just it's using good landing page techniques to get a lot of information onto the page in a very small space, and you know, basically getting the message across that here's this book and here's where you can get it.
I want you to define landing page for me, because it sounds kind of buzzwordy and it might mean something different to different people.
I mean, the most simple definition of a landing page is that it's the first page somebody comes to when they visit your site. I mean, they land there. And then what they do after that is going to go off to secondary pages. what we tend to, in marketing, what we tend to do is we think of landing pages as like a one-page website almost. So if I send you an email and say, hey, here's a here's this new book that we have, and click this link and you can go read about the book. Well, we want that page to be like perfect for that click. You know, ideally as a marketer, for every click that I receive, I send them to the perfect page for that click. It's impossible in reality, but that's what I want, right? I'm going to give you the exact information that you need that really tells you what you're looking for and convinces you that this is the right site for me, or this is the right product for me. So that's, you know, that's what it, kind of when we think about landing pages, that's what we do. Especially in paid ads. We haven't talked about really paid search today much, focusing more on the organic side of things. But whenever we do a paid search campaign, we try to have a very focused landing page for every ad that we buy. And that increases conversions. I mean, it frankly just gets us more customers.
It makes a lot of sense.
So when we're talking about organic search, what kind of tools are used? What's out there?
Sure. So I assume you're talking about outside of the Drupal ecosystem. But you know what? I'm going to mention one in the Drupal ecosystem, and I'm actually going to have to look it up because they recently changed the name. But while I Google that particular tool, the tool that we use the most is Moz. Simply go to moz.com. It's a company that's been around for a while, and they basically produce search engine optimization tools for SEO companies. And they, you know, they crawl your site, they look for problems, they tell you exactly what you need to do to fix each page. You apply a particular keyword to a page, and then they go, we're going to evaluate this page based on what you say this page is all about. And then they'll tell you, oh, you know what, you don't have this right or that right, or we can't even get to the page, or, you know, things like that. And they also pull in data from like Google Analytics and other data sources. So you kind of get a lot of data all in one place.
Can you analyze your competitors on sites like Moz?
You can. Yeah, you can drop in. I think it's up to 3 competitors per site that you're working on, and then it'll actually go in and evaluate their rankings in the search engines for the same terms that you're looking for, and actually give them a score, and then compare your site with theirs, and go, well, this company's moving up or moving down, and compared to you, here's how it looks, and even give you areas that you should focus on. So yeah, it's pretty cool. The Drupal tool I was talking about is called Real-Time SEO for Drupal. It was created by a company called GoalGorilla, and it uses the very famous Yoast JavaScript. There's an open source JavaScript for Yoast, and they've taken that from the WordPress side of the world, and they brought it over into Drupal, and it's got some basic optimization recommendations that it gives you right on a node by node basis.
Yeah, we've had one of the partners of GoalGorilla on our podcast before.
Taco Pozza.
Taco Pozza. We've had them talking about like the paid module ecosystem, and also they're putting out a distribution called Open Social.
Yeah, so I'm at Taco in Dublin, DrupalCon Dublin. And we got to talking about it. I had used the module once or twice before that, and then met him. And I had actually listened to your podcast about that. And he also gave a presentation, was it New Orleans maybe, about the paid ecosystem. And so I kind of listened to both of those. Because I mean, obviously that's anybody who owns a Drupal related company, you know, kind of how to make money in this ecosystem is an important conversation. So, you know, I went and listened to all those, but yeah. But the tool they've made is great. I mean, I use it on several of our sites, and I talk about it in the book. I love seeing SEO specific tools written for Drupal.
That's pretty awesome. So what other tools are available for people to use
outside of Drupal?
So the, you know, obviously Google Analytics, one of the things that we just do right off the bat with a client is we make sure we understand their goals, and then we make sure that we have good data that tells us whether we're meeting those goals, and reports that are actionable. So we, you know, when we look at that report, we go, okay, here are the things that need to be addressed in order to meet the goals. You can't do any of that stuff with without some sort of tracking tool. And Google Analytics is free and it's big, and there's lots of ways that you can use it on your site. And then you tie that into Google Webmaster Tools, which gives you a lot more data about what exact keywords people are typing in to find your site. And that data is no longer available in Google Analytics, especially, you know, I guess it's been about 4 or 5 years now that they took that data out of Google Analytics. It's now in Google Webmaster Tools. And if you connect the two of those together, you can see all that data back in Google Analytics. So that's really nice. You know what? You know, tools is always, I get that question actually quite a bit. What tools do you guys use? And tools are important. I mean, they are really important. But I think that the most important thing is just understanding what you're trying to accomplish and applying yourself to those areas and staying focused. And I think in that regard, one of my favorite tools is quite simply our project management system. We use Basecamp, and we have templates that we use for, you know, different sets of tasks to do for certain projects or parts of projects. And we go through them. We go through those tasks. It keeps us focused. It tells us what we need to do. And then, you know, when we get those reports, we create new tasks and keeps everybody headed in the right direction and focused on what needs to get done. If I had to pick one, I would probably take that over anything else, just keeping me focused on the right things. Maybe.
It's a tough decision. Probably.
Don't hold it.
So when you're actually doing things with search engine optimization, we're not exactly sure what Google is looking for. Like, they keep their algorithm kind of a secret. They do talk a little bit about things that they want, but the actual, you know, if I could do A, B, and C, I would be number one. That's something that could be gamed. So there are some secrets there. And that kind of thing kind of makes it hard to measure. So how do you end up measuring SEO strategy?
Yeah, it's all about the goals. You know, it really is understanding what is it that the customer is looking for, and then what are the things that lead to that. And so, you know, search ranking in and of itself is not helpful. You know, if you're ranking number one for a term that nobody searches on, who cares, right? It doesn't matter. It's really about understanding the end goal that the customer has, and then looking at how are we going to apply the tools that we have and the knowledge that we have to meet those goals. So I wouldn't say there's no magic, right? And there's not a set formula that we just apply to everybody. There's a lot of tasks that are the same from one client to the next, but at the beginning of the project, we've got to customize what we do to meet up with what the customer is looking for. Maybe that was a little evasive as far as an answer, but it's the honest truth. I mean, there's no cookie cutter way to do this.
Okay. So what are some common SEO problems that you see that you fix, and are any of those typical Drupal problems, or are they just kind of standard to all sites on the web?
Well, I mean, I could write a book about horror stories about SEO. I think
I would honestly love to hear a horror story. If you have one or two. Yeah. That sounds pretty awesome.
Horror stories, Drupal horror stories. It should be a different podcast. It'd be like a whole podcast of horror stories.
Yeah, but we don't want to scare people away from Drupal, right?
Okay, fair enough. All right. So, you know, it kind of ties into another question that we get asked a lot, which is why are you a Drupal SEO company? Why do I need Drupal SEO instead of just, you know, SEO, right? SEO is going to be the same, right? You're dealing with Google, and what you do is the same. Why do I need a Drupal company to do that? Well, it's because of some of these horror stories. So one of them that I kind of came across recently, a client hired a non-Drupal company to build them a Drupal website because they like the designs that client makes, but they're a Drupal company. They've been on Drupal for a long time. They just really wanted to, for whatever reason, I guess bad decision making. And so the client's like, yeah, we can do Drupal. It's PHP. We can do anything. Great. So they built the site, and then they said, all right, Ben, we need you to come in and optimize this. And there were two things that were going on that was just super painful. Number one, instead of actually building in all the content to a node and then theming the theming the site so that the node looked the way they wanted it to. They put all the content into a PHP file, and then they put the reference to the PHP file in the node. And so when the page rendered, it pulled that PHP file, and it looked okay from a, you know, delivering the website point of view, but it was unoptimizable. Like, I could not make changes to that page. The metadata wasn't showing up. None of the markup was where it was supposed to be. You couldn't make it. It was just awful. And there were, you know, dozens of these. The main pages of this client's website were now buried in these PHP files. And it was an SEO disaster. The second thing that they were doing was they were not managing the website appropriately. So when they made changes to their dev site, they would push up those changes and they'd wipe out the database on the production website, meaning that any SEO work that I did do was completely wiped out. Unless I did it on their dev server, which they didn't give me access to. So it was kind of like this whole thing. Any comments that people would leave on the client's website wouldn't then be wiped out every time they needed to push something from dev to production.
That's tough.
So it's just like, well, that wouldn't happen if I went and hired Lullabot, right? That wouldn't happen if I hired a company that knew and was well-versed in how to use Drupal. So those are the kind of things that, and this is just, over many years, we've had lots of stories like this where it just, if somebody doesn't understand the way the Drupal works, the Drupal way, as we call it, you're going to end up paying for work to be done again and again and again. Yeah.
We've seen that many times at Lullabot where we get called in to clean up various mm-hmm. projects and we do a good job with it and we're happy to do it because money. but at the same time, it comes down to, like, a lot of times, you know, clients will go with a vendor who came in at a lower price, and this vendor doesn't know the intricacies. They don't know the correct way of doing things. They don't know the consequences of doing things.
Sure.
And you know, bites them in the butt every time.
And here's the thing. Drupal gives you the opportunity to do a lot of things right with SEO with just a few extra modules. Can you talk about some of those?
Yes. Extra modules. So there's a lot of good modules. In fact, I wrote a module about all the modules.
Yeah.
Sounds like Dave Reed territory there.
That's been a few years though. I remember when you came out with that.
Yeah. So the SEO checklist module, in fact, I did something a bit unique with my book in that I created the Drupal 8 version of the SEO checklist module at the same time as I was writing the book. And so I literally organized the chapters of the book to be in the same order and cover the same topics as the Drupal 8 SEO checklist module. And the reason I did that is because the SEO checklist module is free. Of course, you can get it, you can install it, it tells you exactly what to do, but it doesn't tell you how to do it or even why to do it. And that's the content that's in my book is exactly, okay, you need to install that. Here's the step-by-step process for doing that. And here's how to organize it, how to configure it, what it's doing, and then how to test to make sure that you did it right. And so in the SEO checklist module, you're going to find references and links to all the other modules that you need for on-page SEO. Things like the redirect module, which basically makes sure that when somebody visits your site, they go to the proper URL, so that helps with search engine optimization a lot. If somebody links to, say, a node number instead of the actual path, the redirect module will fix that.
Does the double content penalty still exist?
Double content penalty.
Like I have node/1, which is my whatever blog post, but my whatever blog post is at /blog/whatever blog post.
So I know what you're talking about. It's not technically a penalty, which is like Google, you know, actually punishing you for doing something wrong. But yes, it does still exist. And it's just the fact that they get confused. Well, not they, but you know, their crawler gets confused about what's the most important version of this page. And so if you have two different versions of the same content on your site, they don't know which one to show. And so the relevance factors go down. You can be competing with your own site. Getting rid of those, and you can do that using the redirect module, and there's some other little things in Drupal that you can do to make sure you don't have those, like the canonical tags. It's one of those things where I could talk for an hour about how to use canonical tags, but I'll let you go research that.
And in short, a canonical tag is this is the one piece of content that is the piece of content.
Yeah, you put a link on the other piece of content. The canonical link goes on the one that you don't want it to be the primary, and it points over to the primary piece of content.
Okay.
So there's some things like that that you can do to eliminate those problems. But Drupal 8 is better than Drupal 7, just out of the box, but you still need the redirect module to fix some of those. PathAuto, I'm sure you guys are familiar with the PathAuto module and how it works, but basically you can use tokens to define automatic paths for your site. This is important because Google is not just looking at a single page for optimization anymore. It used to, if you optimize this page, then that's all it would take, and you get some links to that page. Now Google looks for, really organizationally, they look for groups of content that are all on a single topic. So you would have multiple pages all on the same topic, optimize all of those pages. You're going to do much better in the search engines with a group of pages all on the same topic than you would with a single page. So the way you do that is with PathAuto.
And that gives you useful looking URLs. One quick question on that. Back in the dark ages, they used to say that hyphens were better than underscores in URLs. Does it matter anymore?
Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Yeah. I like hyphens. I think it looks cleaner. I don't like the underscore because for some reason my eyes tend to lose it.
Okay.
I just don't see it. But so I like the hyphens better, but it does not matter as far as the search engines go.
Gotcha. Sure.
You don't know who do a camel case, Matt Cleave?
I don't know.
I do sometimes.
Yeah.
We talked about the XML sitemap module, breadcrumbs. That's an interesting one. There's putting breadcrumbs. You know, you're familiar with a breadcrumb, right?
Yeah, the little links that kind of tell you where in the site structure right. You are, somewhere toward the top of the page or the side or something. Yeah.
Right. And so Google actually will use those instead of your URL on a search result if you put schema.org microdata markup around it. Or JSON LD markup around it. And sometimes you'll see those in search results. You'll see the listing, and then you'll see like a path, like instead of a URL, a big old long URL, you'll see like this, the path. And you see
I have seen that before.
Yeah, that's all done with microdata.
Huh.
Yep. I wrote about the what's it called? The simple breadcrumbs module, I think is the one that I wrote about in the book, the easy breadcrumbs module. There's also the breadcrumbs here on Drupal 7 or earlier. There's the breadcrumbs, I guess it's called the breadcrumbs suite. I don't have it in front of me, but, and they build in the schema.org markup automatically for you. But you can do it in theme file, if you're not using, the suite. And there's, that's kind of actually some of the fun stuff of writing this book is going, okay, some of these modules are not ready yet. How am I going to solve this problem for Drupal 8 that's already solved in Drupal 7, but it's just they haven't ported the module yet. And I wasn't really willing to write this book until it was ready, until I felt like I could truly optimize a site in Drupal 8. And that's one of the things I'm excited about right now with Drupal 8 is that I think it really is, it's ready. And even some of the stuff I wrote about are still in, they're in beta releases and stuff.
Yeah, but there's a lot of modules that stay in beta for forever just because that's the way absolutely. They want to handle it, right? I mean,
yeah, that's right. But I was able to accomplish everything I needed to accomplish to search engine optimize a Drupal 8 site. And I was like, okay, once I've got to that point, then it's, I feel comfortable writing a book and recommending these modules and releasing this SEO checklist and all that kind of stuff. So are we a little over a year now? We're just like a year and 2 months into Drupal 8. And you're starting to see more sites come out, more bigger sites come out for Drupal 8. And I think that hopefully the SEO side of things will propel marketing departments and at least people who are considering Drupal 8 to move forward with confidence. It can get the job done.
Is there anything you come across that happens very often that you look at Drupal and you shake your head and say, man, Drupal, I wish you wouldn't do it that way?
I've been in Drupal for so long. I'm sure that you get to a point where you're just used to how things work and then you work around it. You know what?
Don't they call that Stockholm syndrome or something like that?
Yeah. I can pull one out right now. It's just like path auto and core needs to happen.
Okay.
You know, I mean that would involve, of course, getting token in core too,
which it is, except for the, core. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Token is in Drupal 8.
Is it?
Yep. There's still a token module, and it lets you do some additional stuff and gives you, I think, some extra tokens.
Tokens in 7, except for the UI of token. The UI that displays, what tokens are available is different, but the actual like creation of tokens is in Drupal 7.
Okay.
Yeah. So the use of tokens is, I think, an overlooked. It's kind of a little too techy for a straight up marketing person. But it's still, it's still very usable if you just spend the time to learn it. But I think tokens can be a very powerful tool to use in your SEO if you know how to approach it.
Tokens or placeholders or variables, it seems like there could be a more pleasant way to introduce someone to it. But definitely a good thing.
That's a good one, naming stuff. People doesn't name stuff particularly well, so I think that's part of it.
Yeah, that's a general Drupal usability issue right there. It's just what to call things.
Mike, there are two difficult problems in computer science, right?
Naming things and caching and validation.
Cache and validation, off by one errors, and cache and validation.
That's the worst joke ever.
So I think one of the things that is always a complaint, and Drupal 8 is so much better from a usability perspective, I almost am loath to bring this up, but it still is just, there's a learning curve. I mean, there just is. It's not as easy. There's too many options, frankly. You get into the admin screens, and there's so much going on that sometimes it can just be overwhelming. There needs to be more effort, I think, put into an out of the box solution to give you a very simplified, just what I need to post my blog and update my homepage if that's what I need to do.
There is a lot of effort going into that. We had a podcast not too long ago about Drupal 8 usability, and so we're talking about things like having, default content. And, default install profiles that can be pulled off the web during the installation process.
And a lot of also workflow and improvements to the editorial experience too.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think just the best thing with Drupal 8 is honestly the fact that we can do that now with semantic versioning, where every 6 months you can add features in there as long as they don't break, your API compatibility. So I think that's pretty fantastic, but we're kind of going off on a little tangent here.
Yeah. And the reason I bring it up from an SEO perspective is simply because it's marketers that I work with, and they're the ones that I hear those kind of complaints from, and keeping marketers engaged, giving them what they need, but making it quick and easy for them to do it is, that's kind of why I have a job. It's why we exist as a company, is because we make Drupal a lot easier for marketers to get done what they need to get done. I still very much want Drupal to be easier, because I think market share is probably our biggest obstacle right now as a company, is that we wish there was just 20 times as many people using Drupal. That'd be good.
Yeah. Absolutely. So, you mentioned you have a book coming out. Is your book out?
It is. It is out. It came out this last Monday. So you can go to Drupal8SEO.com if you want the ebook.
Go to Drupal. That is a great URL for SEO.
Thanks, man. I thought of it myself.
Yeah. You must know what you're doing.
This is not my first rodeo. Or my first book, actually. So and it is on Amazon as well, and other fine bookstores. I think it's on Barnes & Noble by now. So anywhere where you buy books, you should be able to place an order for Drupal 8 SEO. But the ebook is exclusively through Drupal8SEO.com. So you'll go there and you can buy the ebook. If you're more into the Kindle or even a PDF, you can grab it from there. Yeah, it's something it's been a labor of love. I started on it in June, and it's been through about 2.5 rewrites as things changed and as I updated it, and it grew and grew, and it's about 300 pages, and it goes through and it covers really pretty much everything that you need to do out of the box on a Drupal site. To get your search engine optimization, your on-page search engine optimization, where it needs to be. I'm particularly proud of the meta tags section of the book, where I actually go through and give you the exact tokens that you need to use. And there are, you know, I don't know, 100, 150 different meta tag settings that you need to do on your site. And that sounds like a lot, but it's kind of one of those things where you need to get it done once, and then you don't have to really worry about it too much. For the most part, there's always stuff to do on your meta tags, but and the early feedback is good. I've had a couple of people look it over for editing and stuff, and people seem to really seem to like the style. In my first book, I wrote a lot of explanatory text and assumed that you knew nothing about SEO, and did a lot of expository on why things were the way they are. And in this book, I decided just to make it straight up how to get the thing done. And if you want to go read about why something is the way it is, there's Google, you know, there's lots of places to go read about it. But if you want to get it done in Drupal, then, you know, Drupal 8 SEO book is the way to go.
Just for an attempt to see how you did here. I just ran a Google search for Drupal 8 SEO book.
Oh, good.
So there are a couple of ads at the top.
Okay.
One from, I don't know, some SEO fitness workbook. Don't know what that is. Then an ad from Acquia. So good job to them. The actual first result is the Drupal 8 SEO book blog post on Valachi, it looks like.
Nice.
And then Valachi.com.
Okay, good.
And then another Valachi.com, Drupal 8 SEO book -0. So another, Path Audio had another version of the page or something.
Nice.
And then another one from Valachi, and then the actual website. So hey, you're front and center.
Wow,
that's pretty funny. Yeah, yeah. You got to share some of that for other people, you know.
Let some other people have some space. So now you made me go look it up, and now I'm looking at it. Even the one after that is a presentation I did.
Yep.
Somewhere.
Events.drupal.org. You're doing something. Yeah. Yep.
Oh, I see your username under that one too.
Yep. Your account on Drupal.org.
And then your module SEO checklist.
There it is.
There you go. Right on. And then the post I put on Reddit. So there's
a Reddit post
when I announced the book.
So it looks like every single front page result on Google for Drupal 8 SEO book is directly from you.
So, I mean, I didn't set out to do that. But,
yes, you did.
What I wanted to talk about my book, and
you
guys are on my email distribution list. You've received a few emails about my book.
Yep.
Yeah.
I've posted it in a few places, and you know, Drupal.org is a great site. I mean, it gets a lot of links. It has very high credibility. And when I put my content on there, it's going to show up in the search results. I mean, so this is one of the things that you talk about strategy. So all of these things we talked about today are strategies, but a lot of them are tactics. It's like, how do I go in and get that one little thing done? But a good strategy for SEO is you own your site, but you also kind of borrow space from other sites. And you know, it's kind of the hub and spokes model of putting your content and gaining customers out there. So you want to, you know, when you rank in Google, you're kind of borrowing space on their website. And for me, since I'm in the Drupal community, you know, I'm posting to Drupal.org, I'm borrowing space from Drupal.org and connecting back to my own site. Same thing on, hopefully maybe this podcast, you know, I'll borrow a little mind share and a little space on Lolobot's website, and it'll talk about my book and hopefully link back to my site. And that's just it's a model that we use with a lot of our clients to go, own your message, own your company site, but don't ignore everybody else out there. Same thing with social media, Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn and stuff.
And, you know, and we can coexist, Ben. I mean, you came absolutely on our podcast, on our website, and shared things that you knew about SEO. So teamwork.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, and that's the whole thing is you can't just go, you know, I say borrow. It's not stealing, right? You wouldn't have me on here if I wasn't going to share some value and talk about something that's interesting to your audience. It's a give and take. It's a reciprocal.
Well, all right. I appreciate you coming on here, Ben, and talking about your SEO book and Drupal and SEO strategies.
Well, thank you very much, guys. And I appreciate you letting me, you know, talk about my passion. I've been doing Drupal SEO for a decade now. There's not many things in my life I can say I've held on to for a decade. But Drupal SEO is one of them, and I really enjoy it. I mean, it's something I love seeing the results, and I love seeing customers just achieve their vision of what they could be and being part of it, you know. So thank you.
Awesome. Thanks, Ben.
That was uncomfortable there for about 3 seconds.